Hi, Patrick Cox here, and this is The World in Words, a podcast about languages and the people who speak them. In today's pod, growing up in America to Vietnamese parents. What language besides English are you going to pass on to your kids? Vietnamese, right?
That is the million-dollar question. And to be honest, it's kind of complicated. For my mom, it was such a no-brainer that her kids would speak Vietnamese. It was the only other language that she had to pass on. And for me, I actually speak Vietnamese, English, and Spanish.
One woman and her mom on the future of the Vietnamese language in their family.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence, and by PRI's The World.
Okay, that is the voice of Rupa Shenoy. Very classily read, I must say. Rupa is host of the podcast Otherhood, which, what's the best way to describe it?
It's about immigrants and kids of immigrants, people who grew up in this country, but it's also about the emerging minority, majority America and how it's going to work and how that transformation is happening.
All right. Well, this episode of The World in Words, it could almost be an Otherhood podcast.
Yeah.
So my apologies. Stick around and let's talk after we hear from Lily Bui. So I first met Lily here at WGBH in Boston. That was 3 or 4 years ago when she worked here. She grew up a long way from here in Southern California in something of a Vietnamese bubble. And just a 20-second blast of history here. By far the biggest wave of Vietnamese migration to the U.S. came in the 1970s and 80s, especially after the fall of Saigon in 1975. Basically, people fled the communists who had taken over the country, and they arrived in the U.S. mainly as refugees. That's how Lily's mom and dad got here. Lily's relationship to the Vietnamese language is entwined with her upbringing in Southern California, her memories of childhood. When I ask her what her favorite expression is in Vietnamese, the answer is all about those early years.
My favorite phrase has to be, Trời đất ơi! Which is
wait a minute, say that again.
Trời đất ơi!
Trời đất ơi!
Yeah, that's pretty good, that's pretty good. And that's kind of like, oh my goodness, which you say a lot when you're flabbergasted. And it was also something that I heard my mom say a lot when I was in trouble. So literally, it translates to joy, which means the sky or the heavens. And then that means the earth or the ground. And then oi is just like a yes, an interjection.
Sky, earth.
And then yes, or just something that's like an interjection.
Sky, it earth,
Yeah, exactly. And so you get something that sounds like, you know, oh my heavens.
I can understand why you would really enjoy that. When your mom first started using that, presumably you didn't know what it meant, right? Just as it doesn't matter what language it is, we're so young, we've no idea what any of those things mean. But we just hear the sounds and the noises. And
yeah, and the emotions
to, yes.
And the facial expressions. It's all part of it.
And we refer back to it in our memories later on.
And one other thing that's really fascinating about Vietnamese, since you're talking about memory in the past, is that, you know, the language has no tense, technically. So it doesn't have verb conjugations that indicate past, present, or future. Instead, you're relying on context. So there's kind of like an eternal present tense. For example, like if I were to say, I see you yesterday, the yesterday part would imply that it happened in the past instead of the verb itself. It's not in the word see, but it's just in the word yesterday, the adverb.
That's like Chinese, like Mandarin, which is a similar thing.
Yeah.
Which at first you think, oh, this is so great. I don't have to learn all of these tenses and conjugations and all of that. but then you realize that your head has to go in a completely different place in order to make sure that you've given enough clues that you are, in fact, talking about yesterday or tomorrow or whatever it is.
Exactly.
Because there's other ways of doing it.
Exactly.
Wow. So which language did you learn first then? Did you learn Vietnamese before English or both at the same time?
I learned Vietnamese first. So that was the language that was spoken in my household. And then English came later when I started going to school. And probably from TV, if we were watching a lot of TV. I don't have early memories when I was a baby, but I'm very sure that I learned Vietnamese first.
And do you still speak Vietnamese with certain members of your family?
I do, yeah. Nowadays, it's more like a Vietlish. It's a combination of both English and Vietnamese, but I try as much as I can to stick mostly to Vietnamese. So it's this language that is kind of contained within my family, but it requires a lot of effort for me to make that the case. I don't want to lose it. And this mostly happens when I visit home. So there are these moments where my mom and I usually spend nights sitting on her bed. We're both in our pajamas, and she's usually flipping through a Vietnamese magazine or scrolling through videos on her iPad. You can always smell her cooking downstairs, no matter what the time of day or night it is. Sometimes we sit in complete silence for minutes at a time. Sometimes we tell stories. Sometimes, without even thinking about it, she'll start singing. The song she's singing is called Ao Ơi Ao. It's a lullaby. My grandma sang it to her, and my mom sang it to me when I was little. She tells me the song is about a bridge in the country made out of wood. The bridge is hard to walk over, but the mother, who's singing, says that she'll walk with her child.
My name is Mai Bui, and I'm just a mother of the two children.
Just a mother? Here is a woman who runs her own accounting business, organizes events for her community, and worked as a music teacher in Vietnam and in the U.S. But still, when I ask her to introduce herself, she calls herself simply a mother. It's her most important role, she says. Hearing my mom sing in her native language, my first language, makes me wonder how she felt about learning English after coming here. She arrived as part of a wave of people escaping the war in Vietnam. Before then, there were very few Vietnamese immigrants in the States.
When I first came here, everything's new. I just remember that my first difficult thing is I have to listen carefully in order to understand what they say. Like you can understand at first because the pronunciation is different. And when you just start to talk to American people, always hard at the beginning.
Like many other Vietnamese immigrants, my mom signed up for an English class. She already knew some English, but not enough to get by. I try to imagine what it must have been like to have spoken one language for almost 20 years of your life, and then having to start over in a completely different language. I ask her if she was scared or discouraged in these early days. No, she says.
When you get started and you get used to it, gradually you get the confidence and start to talk more.
Wow, I got to say that her English is great now. But I wonder what happened to her Vietnamese. I mean, 20 years is a long time. And a lot of people who come here to the U.S. who don't get the chance to practice their mother tongue regularly, they lose some of it over time.
Actually, she speaks Vietnamese pretty frequently. It's still her primary language, I would say. And she still, you know, has to practice English. That's secondary. That comes secondary to her Vietnamese. A lot of this is because her business is located in Little Saigon, this little neighborhood in Orange County, California, where the majority of the population is Vietnamese. So she ends up speaking it with her customers, coworkers, friends, and relatives who live nearby and just kind of stop by her office to say hello. So most of her social circle is full of Vietnamese people.
So there's Vietnamese and English in her world. But what about for you? I mean, obviously you had this sort of moment when you were young of those early years speaking Vietnamese, but it's all different now. Well, I mean, how have you managed to continue speaking Vietnamese beyond the home?
I mostly speak it within the home and within my family. But there have been chances to speak, you know, growing up in Orange County and interacting with people in Little Saigon. And it just feels like the polite thing to do. It's weird for me to answer things in English if someone asks me a question in Vietnamese. It just feels a little rude. And there were also Vietnamese classes that were offered at temples around where I grew up, and I never took them, to be honest. But I was kind of lucky because my mom taught those classes, and I would go through her books at home and have her teach me what all the accent marks and all the pronunciations were.
Mm. But presumably there's that usual thing with languages in the US. Over time, a couple of generations go by and people stop using the language. I mean, typically it's the third generation, you know, the immigrants that come over, struggle with English, their kids have a little bit of both languages, and then the next generation after that only has English. Mm-hmm. So what about the grandkids of Vietnam War refugees and other people who came over from Vietnam at that time? Do they generally speak the language? And I wonder how they end up hearing it if they're not actually, you know, living close to Little Saigon.
I don't think we're quite there at the third and fourth and beyond generations yet. I'm still the first, you know, person in my family, my immediate family, to have been born in the States. And I would say that a lot of learning of Vietnamese happens inside the home. And it's part of your experience growing up, but there are more and more opportunities to learn it in formal ways. And I think, in general, the Vietnamese community is realizing that there's this need to carry it on beyond the family itself. So I spoke to a professor at UCLA who makes this his main mission. His name is Quyen Nhi Chuc Bui, or Thầy Quyen Nhi. And he has this really interesting way of teaching the language. He says that teaching Vietnamese makes him a dancer.
A dancer?
Yep, a dancer. So he uses these really kinetic analogies to teach students to use accent marks. So you would think that a normal language class is just sitting in a classroom and reading things on a board or in a book. And, you know, with Vietnamese, there are a lot of accent marks. And he likes to spice things up a little bit. And accent marks in Vietnamese, there are some that go up, some that go down, and then some that dip down and then come back up. You know, he finds ways to teach students how to write accent marks by actually having them act out the accent marks. He has them stand up and dance the tonal inflections by moving their bodies and gesturing with their hands.
Everybody laugh. But after that, they remember. Mm-hmm. They remember.
Thầy Quyen Nhi has taught Vietnamese for most of his life. Nowadays, he teaches the language to the children of Vietnamese immigrants and to anyone else who's interested. Today, he's visiting my family. My mom brought us biscuits and tea. He's dressed in a full suit and sits upright across from me. He's poised, but he speaks with a huge smile on his face.
The first way of Vietnamese come to U.S., Vietnamese family would like to push children learn English to survive. Somebody told me some family have slogan, gia đình tôi không nói tiếng Việt.
That means my family does not speak Vietnamese. For new immigrants, it was all about learning English.
Learn English. But after that, parents, they think they lost their children. When children didn't speak Vietnamese, not only they lost language, but also lost culture.
Oh yeah, I imagine he's got to see a lot of that happening, and it clearly has meaning for him if he sees the culture disappearing too. Is this something a lot of people are talking about in the Vietnamese community more than before?
I would say so. People are trying to create different ways to teach kids Vietnamese. I found another person, Billy Lay, who's with the Garden Grove Unified School District, also in Orange County, which serves one of the biggest Vietnamese populations outside of Vietnam. And he helped set up a dual language immersion program.
This program allows students to learn two languages at the same time, English and Vietnamese. And according to statistic, based on our current Garden Grove mayor, he said that students who learn both languages at this young age tends to do better.
A first step, perhaps, towards something bigger.
And I feel that it's important for us to keep that culture and language in us by teaching our kids, because if we don't, you know, who will be there in the future to retell all these great stories about our ancestor? How do we learn from our past mistakes or anything from the history to better ourselves? In Vietnamese, there's a phrase called Tiếng Việt còn, Người Việt còn, also translated into if there's still the Vietnamese language, there is still the Vietnamese people.
Okay, it sounds as though the Vietnamese language is incredibly important to Vietnamese people.
Mm-hmm.
But really? I mean, like, would your cultural identity vanish without the language and your mother's?
There is an assumption that language and culture come together and are this inseparable thing, but maybe not. Like, you can speak Vietnamese very, very well without necessarily understanding the culture, but you can also be Vietnamese without speaking the language. So when I talked to my mom, she told me about a little piece of culture that doesn't necessarily have to do with the language at all. And this is her áo dài, her traditional Vietnamese dress. So if you can imagine, it's a long, flowy gown, usually in soft, bright colors, sometimes with patterns. It's got a very high collar, and you wear it with silk pants. And this is something that she tends to dress up in a lot when she goes to events and weddings and things like that.
In college, we have International Day, and I wear my áo dài to that event, and everybody just look at me, and they say, oh, it's so beautiful, and they come to me, and they look at my áo dài, and it's made me very proud and very happy.
But then again, she's convinced that the language is central to her identity.
You have to speak your language in order to understand your culture. We have a proverb, uống nước nhớ nguồn. That means when you drink the water, you have to remember the source. Whenever you go, whoever you are, you still have to remember where you come from. I always remember what I am, and I'm a Vietnamese girl.
Wow, language really is memory.
Yeah, you know, that last thing that she said, I get the sense that she's talking directly to me as much as she's answering the question, as in, I totally think that she's expressing her opinion about how she feels about remembering who you are. But part of the way that she says it is like, Lily, wherever you go, wherever you are, you have to remember where you come from.
So what does that say to you about how you're going to raise your own kids in the future? I mean, that's quite a challenge she's set up for you in ensuring that something about your own Vietnamese-ness continues. So what are you going to do? What do you think you're going to do when it comes time to passing it on to the next generation?
That is the million-dollar question. And to be honest, it's kind of complicated. For my mom, it was such a no-brainer that her kids would speak Vietnamese. It was the only other language that she had to pass on. And for me, I actually speak Vietnamese, English, and Spanish.
How come you speak Spanish?
Well, I ended up majoring in Spanish and international relations with a focus on Latin America in my undergraduate career, and now I speak Spanish fluently. So I kind of wonder what language I'll actually be passing on to my kids, because I speak three.
So you're actually making a choice possibly between Spanish and Vietnamese? How does your mom feel about that?
Yeah, well, she has, you know, she's glad to know that I have such an interest in language. But, you know, back when I was choosing my major, she wanted me to be a doctor. So I think she was confused at first. But over time, I finally understood why I was so drawn to Spanish and what I was studying. And then she started to understand, too. There's a weird way of explaining that. For example, I was obsessed with Cuba because of how much it reminded me of my parents' stories from Vietnam.
How so?
Well, both Cuba and Vietnam are countries that were taken over by socialist political leaders. And as a result, there were huge waves of diaspora from both places to the United States. So the stories that my mom and dad told me while I was growing up of longing for your home country and leaving your life behind and starting over were the same kinds of stories that I found myself reading about in Cuba's history. And there was kind of like a parallel storyline of leaving and starting over in a new place that I immediately connected with. So I think language is very connected to memory, but it's also the emotions that come with those memories. And I would talk to my mom about what I was learning in my classes, and she knows very little about Cuba. But when I told her some of the stories that I had come across from Cuban poets and writers, she got it almost right away and knew where it was coming from.
It's obviously incredibly important for many Vietnamese, Vietnamese Americans, to keep the culture alive. But I wonder, what culture are they keeping alive? Is it a pre-Vietnam War culture? Is it this, you know, is it somewhat bottled in time? That country was completely transformed by war and then transformed again as it's opened up and built its economic strength. And yeah, I wonder how your older family members react to what's going on in the new Vietnam.
It's a mixed bag. There are some members of my extended family who are war veterans, so they still view the new Vietnam, quote unquote, with skepticism. And I suspect that they always will. And my grandparents aren't alive anymore, so I can't exactly ask them their thoughts about it. But when they were here, I sensed that they felt an extreme loss for their country and their home. My parents are a little bit different, and they pretty much moved on, and they have a life in the States now, and they look back every so often, but they're pretty much rooted here. And as for me, I kind of feel that I can only look back on a history that both is mine and isn't mine at the same time. Those who came before me have done a great deal to preserve Vietnamese culture, and a lot of that is carried by the language, through stories, songs, and expressions. And I think, in a way, all those things are always going to be a part of me.
Lily Bui, she's currently a PhD student at MIT's Department of Urban Studies and Planning, and she sings in English and occasionally in Vietnamese. I have evidence of that, and I'll play it in a few minutes. It's quite lovely. So, Rupa Shenoy, host of the Otherhood podcast, have I encroached on your turf here?
A little bit, but there are lots of things that we know about each other when you grow up in a multicultural society among people who are heterogeneous and whatever, that we don't tend to come out and share with mainstream white people so much. So you encroach to a certain extent, but in Otherhood, I hope to take it like 10 years past that, like way farther in the thinking, because it's supposed to be an insider conversation.
Oh, right. Okay. So just to give me an idea, what kind of questions would you have explored with Lily that I didn't go into?
How do you treat people who don't speak your language? What kind of reaction do you get when you speak your language? And then supermarkets, drugstores, talking about people. There's always a story about, oops, someone around us speaks Vietnamese. We didn't realize that. And wow, we should not have said that.
Oh, right. So you're having like what you think is a little private conversation, but it turns out that some third party who you think doesn't understand what you're saying.
Right.
Does.
And it's the only time that happens in your lifetime, and you get really used to having this secret language and you love it. And then that one time that it happens, you just feel so ashamed. And that's the story you tell always.
That sounds like it's happened to you.
Oh, yeah.
So what language are we talking? What is your heritage language?
Okay, so we are a very small ethnic group called Konkani. So the long story is we are originally from Iran, and hundreds of years ago, we came down through the Khyber Pass into India and settled in an area near Goa. And I am 100% that. Like, we never intermingled. And so, like, I am purebred Konkani, which is crazy when you grow up in America, because it's just, that doesn't happen. Even in India, it's you know, more mixed than that. So the language, what happened is when I grew up, I was born in the States. I was raised initially in the language, and I spoke it. I have the meter, the rhythm of it in my head. It's some of my favorite words and some of my favorite expressions. But when I was about, I'd say 4 or 5, they tried to switch me to English, and I stopped talking, like, for a year. And they freaked out. Then, like, some Iowa doctor told them that they had to only speak English. So then they were just militant about only speaking English, which people will tell you now. And I think Lily spoke about this as well, that, you know, if you just keep going, the kids will pick up both languages. And this was, you know, misinformation that was spread at the time that I now blame fully for not being able to speak my language as well as I could. And then there's the initial additional problem, because I've been to India so very often, like I should be better at it. But the problem is that the language varies from village to village, and they use so many inside jokes. It's crazy. I've tried to like diagram out the language, and it's just like there's no logical verb conjugation. It's just all about memorization. And I just complain about it all the time, and they just laugh at me.
They just laugh at you.
They laugh at me so much.
Do they think there's something wrong with you, or do they just accept that you haven't been exposed to the language that much because you live in...
I'm not sure there's much thought about it. I just think it's just nice, you know? They're like, not many people try and speak this language. And so if you have someone, an American, you know, an incredibly privileged person coming in and like looking dumb because they can't speak your language, that's, I imagine it's fun to laugh at them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That sounds like a great excuse to have a laugh.
Yeah. Yes.
So what's in the latest episode of Otherhood?
The one we just finished was about the relationships between Somali Americans and other African immigrants and refugees and African Americans, especially surrounding Black Lives Matter, and how current events are bringing those two cultures together in ways that haven't happened in the past. And that was a really deep schism that really bothered the two communities, and it's coming together, coalescing now, which is really interesting. And then the next one is about just how confused I am about being a reporter and suddenly choosing a beat that is all about immigration and wondering, does that make me biased? Is that biased in and of itself? And just asking a bunch of questions about journalism and like saying things that other people can't say, because there are journalists of color within media today are in a very unique position that can't be spoken about because they have to worry about their careers and things like that. But it's a really big dynamic in what's happening. And so I kind of want to talk about that and expose it a bit.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Really looking forward to it. Thanks so much, Rupa, for coming on the
Thank
podcast.
You.
Talk to you again soon.
Okay.
Rupa Shenoy is the host of Otherhood, which you can hear at all the usual podcasty places. And if you really like it, and for that matter, if you like The World in Words, please leave a review at iTunes or anywhere else. Every review helps us get the word out just a little bit more. We're on Facebook. There's a World in Words page. Also on Twitter, at LingoPod. I'm at Patrick Cox. That's PATRICOX. Thanks to Rupa, and thanks also to Lily Bui. Here she is singing a Vietnamese song. In fact, it's the very first song her mother taught her. We'll be back soon.
Một chiều em, ta đan tay dìu nhau trong lối, đưa em đi nhẹ nhẹ vào đời. Bằng vòng tay, tôi nâng niu mùa thu thức giấc, đưa em vào ngày tháng bỏ về. Kể từ em, đêm cô đơn một lần phố vắng, khi em mang nụ cười khỏi đời. Từng chiều rơi nghe như cõi lòng bên tê tái, ngỡ như đời còn gọi tên nhau. Ngày đó khi một lần tin hát ngắm loa đưa em vào vùng trời lấp lánh, bằng những cánh sao trời đầy đời mắt ngước chìm em xa gian ngàn đời hoang vắng. Tôi đi về buồn chừng kể tao bước chân này còn tròn kiếp hoang vu.
The World in Words is made possible in part by the National Endowment for the Humanities, celebrating 50 years of excellence, and by PRI's The World.